So one of the things I do when I'm starting a movie is, and not like a starting movie, when I'm thinking about writing a film, when I have like an idea for a film, is what I'll do is I'll go through my record collection and just start playing songs, trying to, like, basically, I guess in some ways, find the personality of the movie, find the spirit of the movie. And then, boom, eventually, like, I'll hit, like, one, two, three songs that, like, you know, one song in particular, oh, this would be a great opening credit song, you know, because to me, the opening credits are very, very important, because that's sort of like that's like the only, like, mood time that most movies give themselves, you know, and, like, you know, a cool credit sequence, and the music that plays in front of it, you know, or note play any music in front of it, you know, whatever you decide to do, that sets up, like, a tone for the movie that is important for you. And so that's, you know, so I'm always trying to find, like, what the right opening credit or closing credit sequence should be, you know, early on when I'm just even thinking about the story. Because once I find it, that really kind of triggers me in to what the personality of this piece should be, what the rhythm of this piece should be. Like I'm saying, you don't have to use music. It could just be silence, all right? All right, but then that's important. That is, like, kind of in some ways, like, the rhythm and more or less the personality you're trying to project in this film. Having Mr. Liu as your opening credits, it's just so intense, you know. It just says, you're watching an epic, you're watching this big old movie, just sit back, because, you know, I mean, because it's so loud and blaring at you, you know. It's just like, actually, it throws down a gauntlet that the movie now has to live up to, because it's just saying, we're big. I love Bresson, and I love kung fu movies, you know. All right, you know, and, I mean, there is a difference between the two of them, but I appreciate them both for what they do, you know. And it's the same thing with music. I think growing up in the 70s gives you appreciation for certain music that came out in the 70s that nobody else on the planet has appreciation for unless you grew up listening to it, you know. And it's not like, oh, it's so bad, it's good. No, I love Little Willie. I think The Sweet's Little Willie is a great song, all right? You know, I would listen to that again and make no apologies for it whatsoever. That's a cool, cool song, all right? But it's like, you know, people who can't, you know, people from the generation before don't appreciate it. You go, oh, yeah, we had the 60s and we had this and we had that, and just, like, wrote down everything as junk. And the 70s, well, we grew up with it, so we like it a lot, you know? And again, I really don't come from the attitude of, like, well, it's so cheesy that I like it. No. I like it, okay? I think it's good, all right? You know, so there definitely is, you know, is that flowing around there. But, like, for instance, like, Jungle Boogie is, like, that's not, like, a novelty record. That's, like, an intense, like, rhythm and blues instrumental, man. That is, like, that's a cool song. Pulp Fiction is different from Dogs insofar as, like, in the case of Reservoir Dogs, every piece of music in the movie was source music. You know, somebody turned on the radio and you heard something, you know, somebody did, you know, it was like, you know, set up in the scene. In the case of Pulp, I actually use score, all right, but in this case, what I did was all the surf music in the movie. I mean, a lot of it is used as score. When John Travolta is driving and that there's that little heroin montage, you know, that's score music. He's not listening to the radio, you know, and you hear it throughout the film. And the reason I did that was I always really dug surf music a lot, all right? But the thing is, I never quite understood what the hell it had to do with surfing. I mean, you know, I don't see the connection between this music and surfing. I always, like, to me, it sounded like rock and roll spaghetti western music. What I don't want to do is, and I see it happen in a lot of movies, is where they just turn up the soundtrack, all right, to like create a false energy, or in particular to create, like, you know, a sense of period that they're not investing in the picture. All right, okay, it's the 60s. We'll play a lot of 60s songs, and that will create the period. All right, to me, that's cheap and it's annoying. And like listening to the radio and watching a movie at the same time, they don't really go together. And it's just like it just seems cheap to me. And I try to avoid that. I really want the songs that I'm using in the movie, you know, like in the case of the Maria McKee, or in the case of the Al Green Let's Stay Together, or in the case of any of them, to, like, you know, really kind of work in the crux of the scene, all right. I mean, like, for instance, like the Al Green song playing in the scene with Bruce Willis the way it does. I mean, that's almost like a hypnotic score, the way that plays. And just like, because like the majority of the song plays as you're just staring at this like long take of Bruce Willis listening to somebody off screen. The music was tied into, I mean, it was serving two functions. One, it actually, you know, it all had to be 70s because it was working from a 70s radio station. And two, the music was supposed to be reacting as somewhat of an ironic counterpoint, all right, you know, to what you were seeing on the screen. So, you know, that's why I went on my way to get bubblegum songs. You know, I didn't have Led Zeppelin or Marvin Gaye's What's Going On playing, you know. I was like, I wanted, you know, the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. I wanted that kind of stuff. And, you know, Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes. I didn't use that, but like that style of songs as a comic, you know, as a ironic counterpoint. Well, here I'm not really trying to do that. I'm actually trying to find songs that, kind of work more in harmony with what you're seeing, you know, and it just kind of ended up being all over the map. I mean, you know, there is 70s stuff, you know, you play Al Green in there, and you know, or you play Kool and the Gang's Jungle Boogie, you know, you've definitely got a 70s feel. Same thing with Dusty Springfield. That sequence in the movie, you know, basically the scene of a guy going to a house to pick up a date, and like, you know, and he's just waiting for her, all right, and there's all this like tension, you know, he's heard a lot about her, but he hasn't met her yet, and she's talking to him on this intercom, and there's a note on the door saying just let yourself in, so you're like waiting for her first appearance, and he's kind of like, you know, apprehensive about it. That whole idea for a story I've had in my head for like, you know, 6 or 7 years, that sequence, and it always was scored to Son of a Preacher Man. The movie's all over the map. You know, the movie uses a bunch of different styles in order to kind of tell its three stories about one story. It's constantly switching gears. It has like an overdrive gear. It has a cruise control, you know, and it has a first and a second and a third all the way through the movie, you know. The movie doesn't move like a bullet. I don't want it to move like a bullet. I mean, I want it to move like a bullet when it's supposed to. And the other times I wanted to just kind of like, you just kind of hang out for a while, you know. And then when it moves like a bullet, it moves, it's even, you know, it's a real bullet. I think it moves even faster. So, you know, that's the whole rhythm of the movie. And the music is very important in that regards. I think it really helps me create that rhythm. All right, we're really trying to make it like, you know, fun and neat and not just a collection of songs. You know, kind of give it a kind of a personality, like this own like little mini offshoot of the movie where you get like pieces of dialogue and hopefully the dialogue's witty enough and it's interesting enough that you completely hear it out of context and just enjoy it for that. Even before the soundtrack thing, when you're just talking about some of the music from the movie, there's always a little bit of discussion about, Quentin, this band really loves you and they would do a song. All right, and if we got a song of theirs on the soundtrack, oh my God, you know. And then when we go out to sell the soundtrack, oh, we could get this much of an advance if we had a song like that. All right, but never bad pressure. But it's just like, look, Quentin, now that's out there. Know it's out there, and boy, would it be so great if you decided to do it. All right, part of my problem, though, with that is the fact that it's the same exact problem I have with the score, is I'm a little nervous about having a band write a song for me, all right, because I might not like it, you know, and what if I don't like it, you know, then I'm stuck, you know, then either, you know, I mean, I probably wouldn't use it, but then I got to tell them I don't want to use it, and then I've hurt their feelings, you know. And it's like, you know, I just feel weird about that. And so it's like, you know, when there was a thought of like, is there one like new song that we could put on there that, you know, that you would like, you know. And, you know, The Urge Overkill is a new song, but I that was not a problem. I knew I wanted that. But then I'm a big Maria McKee fan. If you do it right, if you use the right song, in the right scene, and it just, really, when you take songs and put them in a sequence in a movie, right, it's about as cinematic a thing as you can do. I mean, it really, you're really doing what movies do better than any other art form, you know? I mean, it really works in this visceral, emotional, cinematic, you know, way that's just, like, special. I mean, it's just really, really special. And when you do it right, and you hit it right, then the effect is you can never really hear that song again without kind of thinking about that image from the movie, all right? I mean, you are just such a poser and such a lame-o, all right? Like, you know, for using a song that another movie is already kind of like, you know, christened, all right? You know, it's like, I mean, they've used Stand By Me so many times, but to me, the one that used Stand By Me the way is in The Wanderers. You know, and the one they're playing Stand By Me as the lead character Ken Wong realizes that like JFK's been shot, and it's perfect. You know, all those other even Stand By Me, all right, are posers by that. I mean, you can't use Stand By Me after The Wanderers, all right. I mean, when Dirty Dancing used Be My Baby, it's like that is the opening theme to Mean Streets. Excuse me, all right, you know, I mean, like, you know, how can you use Be My Baby? I mean, whenever I hear Be My Baby, I see Harvey Keitel leaning back on his pillow. At one point, I thought about using My Sharona for the sodomy rape sequence. Because, you know, My Sharona has a really good sodomy beat to it, if you think about it, you know. Dun 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 dun, bum bum bum, bum bum bum, bum 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 bum, My Sharona. Okay, you know, it like, you know, it's, has that, you know, I could, you know, set the time by that. I thought, hey, that'd be really cool to use it. And it just seems so funny to me. I was like, oh, God, this is just too funny not to use. All right. So we tried to get them. And apparently part of the band was for it, but there was, like, one of the band has become a born-again Christian or something, and he just wasn't for it. And he just, no, I'm not interested, you know. And, like, you know, the guy did Reservoir Dogs? Oh yeah, please. Let me give you my song, all right? You know, that's what we got is My Sharona. Now you're going to screw it up in everybody's mind? Okay, great. And at the time, Reality Bites wanted to use it. And the guy, we'll go with them. Thank you very much. And the thing is, I mean, ultimately, I'm glad. Ultimately, I'm glad because that would have made that, it would have been too cute. It would have been too cutely comic. You know, I like using this stuff for comic things, but I don't want it to be har har, wink wink, nudge nudge, you know, and that kind of would have bordered on that, you know. So you know, Comanche still works the same. It's kind of funny actually, but it doesn't break the scene. The Statler Brothers is one of the major uses of a song that wasn't my idea. That was my music supervisor Karen Rackman's idea. Karen just kept like, you know, giving me different tapes, and you know, for every like five new songs, she'd put an old song on there. And there was just like once I, the Statler Brothers, that's great, man. I could see Bruce singing that song. Yeah, that would be really good. That would be terrific, you know. And then, you know, I told the Bruce, oh God, I love it. Oh, that's terrific. I love that song. Rich Overkill doing Neil Diamond's Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon. That's a great song. I mean, we didn't say, hey, let's go out and get a remake song. All right, let's just do a remake. All right, it was like, I wanted to use that piece of music, like, since, you know, when I was writing the film. All right, I heard their version of that song, and I was like, boom, I want to plug that into the movie. That's a perfect song for me to dance to. And I'm right, it is a perfect song for me to dance to. And this is like in the, you know, the pre-production stage of Pulp. And I had about like six different songs. I was moving back and forth. I changed my mind all the time on the Mia dance number sequence. You know, sometimes I thought about like the Collins Kids would be great for that. I thought about all these different things. And then I played this Urge Overkill, whatever they're called, the mini LPs or whatever. I played it, and they had the first one on there was a remake of Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon. And some people I know them, and they said, oh, they just adore Neil Diamond. They just love Neil Diamond. Well, I love Neil Diamond too, all right? And so, like, you know, I heard their version of it, and it was great. Now, I have always loved Neil Diamond's version of that song, and their version is even better, all right? And all of a sudden, it's like, this is it. This is it without a doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt. This is the song that Mia has to dance to by herself. I played it for Uma. Uma flipped, all right? Yes, you're right. This is great. This is fantastic. I completely agree, you know? And so it was great. And so that was like, you know, that was, you know, it was one of those things where, like, I was in love with about, like, four or five songs. I could have used any one of them, and I kept flip-flopping, you know, but then, like, then I found my true love. I mean, when people ask me, like, you know, what kinds of music do you listen to? I really never know what to say, you know? I listen to a whole lots of types of music, you know? And I always feel somewhat resentful if I have to, like, start, like, narrowing it down. Because, well, that kind of says something about me, and that's not really the whole story. You know, I mean, if I say, oh, I really, you know, I really like folk music a lot. I really like listening to folk music. All right. Well, I do. All right. But I like listening to all kinds. And like, you might, you know, make some personality makeup by me saying that, that I don't think is necessarily, not that it's a bad personality makeup, but I don't think it's necessarily representative of me. Do you know what I mean? You know, it's like, you know, so I always feel kind of weird, you know, trying to narrow it down. You know, it's the same thing for, you know, to me, you know, it's the same thing about, like, how I feel about movies. You know, I mean, I like all kinds of movies, and it's kind of all over the board. I make tapes for friends of mine, you know, and I make, like, special tapes for special friends, and this has that feeling about it. I could, you know, I could, this could easily be a Quentin tape.